Hey, everybody. Welcome to the A&N After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and James Beckett is here.
Yo.
And we made a decision about the two shows. We looked at your guys' comments and suggestions that I got via Twitter and just people I talked to for their opinions about which show would be the best one to cover for the spring 2023 anime season. We've settled on two. Mm-hmm. And with, you know, we'll check in on others throughout. It was kind of hard to choose, but the two that we've picked is Gundam the Witch from Mercury season 2 and Heavenly Delusion.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a little bit of like behind the curtain thought on why we went with those, other than the fact that they're both really interesting series. We wanted to go with what we thought would generate the most discussion, be the most fun to like listen to us talk about. So for instance, we did a Demon Slayer arc last time that aired. We did Entertainment District arc, and while that show is like fun to watch for the spectacle,
yeah,
it is hard to talk about for an hour, 30, 45 minutes. You know, sometimes we have the new segment week to week to week, because sometimes it's just like not a lot to chew on. There isn't necessarily a lot of intrigue. It's a pretty straightforward show, which doesn't mean it's bad. It just means that as far as like a podcast, it doesn't lend itself to the format very well. Oshinoko was another front runner, and I did watch the premiere of that just earlier today, so I can say that I finally did that. I had already read the entire first volume of the manga, so my reactions to everything were not probably quite as strong as some people going in blind, but it was excellent premiere. We'll still be checking in on that show every once in a while to see if our little boy Aqua gets his vengeance. I won't spoil for what, because I think that's the twist everyone kind of kept to their chest for this series, is no one was talking about that twist. It was okay to talk about the gynecologist being reincarnated as baby, but not so much the follow-up, right?
We have weird jobs. If you really think about it, you know, the things that we have to say just professionally on a regular basis, I think are very
strange.
It's fun.
Yeah. Gynecologist reincarnated as a baby. Yeah. Where else would you get to say that? So we'll be checking in on that one. I'm reviewing Ranking of Kings. James, you want to tell everybody what you're reviewing for Daily Streaming this season?
Yeah, I got Magical Destroyers, which I'm super excited about. That show rules. Mm-hmm. We're still rocking Vinland Saga season 2, which is a masterpiece. Just, it's kind of like casually just dropping, you know, greatest of all time episodes just left and right. It's kind of ridiculous. Nier Automata is going to come back someday, maybe. We still haven't honestly heard. It's been a month, so the hiatus, I think we've officially outpaced the original month-long hiatus.
So we're waiting on how many episodes still are left of that, 2 or 3?
Well, it's supposed to be 2 cores, so
it's
supposed to run for 24 is what I've read.
Okay.
Which would make sense given the pace they've gone. Unless they were only planning on doing like a third of the game, which right. I guess maybe.
I thought they may have planned to split it, since that's pretty common. I didn't know if it was supposed to
be continued. At this point, I feel like
it is, isn't it? At this point, yeah.
I mean, at this point, I feel like they're going to start rebroadcasting it again or something. So mm-hmm. you know, maybe by the time we hit like August, we'll get like caught up.
Yeah.
And Demon Slayer. I'm also reviewing Demon Slayer.
Yeah, and Demon Slayer. And I'm, like I said, I'm just coming back for Ranking of Kings. I had some thoughts about picking up Ancient Magus Bride, since our reviewer who did the first season of that has moved on to other things. But Nicholas Dupree really wanted it, so I let him have it, along with Kamikatsu and the Legendary Hero is Dead. Mm-hmm. So I figured that was fair.
Monkey's paw curled ever inward.
I love my job. So with that said, yeah, there's a lot of interesting shows. There's some, you know, not so great ones. We went over the premieres on our last podcast. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen to that, you can head over there and see which ones we recommend for following this season. But this season we will primarily be looking at Witch of Mercury and Heavenly Delusion. And since we've got 3 episodes of Heavenly Delusion and 2 episodes of Witch of Mercury, including a huge plot development reveal.
Yeah. Yeah, Witch for Mercury popped off this week. It's not playing around.
It totally did. So because of that, we're not going to do a news segment. We're just going to go straight into anime talk. So hopefully most of you are here because we're just going to be diving right into that. And I thought we'd start with Witch for Mercury. What this show keeps reminding me is that I feel like anime plot like leaks out of my head almost immediately after it wraps. Like, I just don't like hold on to it that long.
Well, especially in a show like this where there's so a lot of what we're supposed to remember are like developments that are only like just now. Like, I couldn't remember what Shattuck's dad's name was for the life of me. I forgot that he was even like connected to, I couldn't even remember if they told us that he was connected to the one president guy who showed up this week. And so when it's all of these like
pieces, that's his adopted father.
So yeah, it can be hard to keep track. I have to check the wiki pretty constantly. Yeah. To be like, wait, when did we learn about? Oh, okay, that was like 5 episodes ago. Okay, that was all right. I'm glad they're paying that off. But
yeah. After watching these most recent 2 episodes, I feel like I have most of it under wraps. But if I'd love to get you to explain Elon to me, because I feel
I'm also confused about Elon.
He's the one aspect, chat, you can jump in if I'm getting any of this wrong, that I don't quite. Okay, so the first Elon she met, right, was kind of the cold, standoffish guy.
Yeah, and the whole birthday thing going on.
Yeah, the whole birthday thing. And that was really traumatizing. Suleta isn't aware that there's been multiple Elons, right? That's the thing that I'm a little iffy on. Like, she doesn't know, like, she just thinks he stood her up once and then reappeared again. So I know that I want to know, how many Elons are there? I think there's 3. Someone please tell me how many Elons we've met.
There's an original Elon.
Right. Right. And he's kind of a dick, right?
Yeah, he's the one that sucks.
Okay, he sucks. Okay.
And then there's the Elon that got died.
Okay,
instead of Suleta. And then the one we
felt for, like, we kind of know. Okay.
But then there's this guy who's, and he talks about, like, he changed his face. He got face swapped to be like an Elon body double. So I don't think he's like a clone. He's just like some other guy. It's like, I think. But then I was, the thing that confused me was he was like kind of teasing her about their prior connection. And so I couldn't remember. That's where I was like, wait, is this the original Elon?
Or I feel like the first Elon we met, like, he was being heavily supervised. And if I remember right, isn't it by the same like ladies that we've seen palling around with Prospera? Like, they all kind of look the old ladies, right?
Yeah, and they're all like connected to the Gundarm research plot that's going on.
Okay, Shoulder in here is helping us out by saying there's Elon Prime, who's the one that sucks. Enhanced person number 4, who was laser cannoned. That's the one that we liked and then died. And enhanced person number 5, who's a fuckboy, who's the one we're seeing in the screenshot here. Okay, there is 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, can someone also kind of remind me of what makes someone an enhanced person? This may not really matter, like, in the long thing of the plot. I just want to know.
They can interface with the Gundam technology. They can like use the Gundam, like, not the bits of the floaty things, but they can interface with it and like it can power them up. And it's the same with the two Earth girls, Sophie and I just forgot the one that doesn't die at the end of the show.
Right, and that's different than Suleta, which we find out like what her deal is here. Someone else in the chat is saying that the women who worked on Elon might be a different group. That's also possible because now that I'm thinking about it, each one of the Gundam is connected to a particular corporation, and I can't remember Elon's right now. But
yeah, they're a different company, but they're the ones that like also have been like basically researching Gundam stuff, in secret, and they're like, yeah, now's our time to. Now we're going to bust out with our Gundam stuff too. Okay. So it's like a patent war, but with actual murder instead of just patent murder.
Yeah. So that was like my remaining hang up. I know. So also know people have been talking about the fate of Jewel/Bob, because wasn't that the new name he got when he started? His daddy kicked him out of his corporation after too many failed duels and whatnot, and so he ended up working on like a warehouse style ship, right? And it was renamed Bob so people wouldn't know where he came from. And then if I remember right, that is what got hijacked by Shadeek and the Earthian sort of like a terrorist group.
Yeah.
They hijacked that, and that's how he inadvertently ended up killing his own dad. And we haven't seen him.
No, I don't think he showed up since then.
No, but he's in the opening, so he has to come back, right? So in the meantime, his younger brother, the one who's always like touching his hair, he like does this as like a character trait or whatever. He's like representing their entire group during this, the most dangerous school open house I've ever seen.
It's like it's like one of those like what do they used to call them, like field days? It's like a it's like a field day, except with well, they're not supposed to get murdered because they're supposed to have the limiters, but Sophie shows up and straight up like almost crushes little brother Jeddark to death.
Yeah, let's talk about Sophie, because I mean she's out of the running now, right? Like gone too soon.
She dead. Yeah.
She dead. And she seems like the first picture we have of her. So I'll go ahead and pull this one up. But yeah, she's dead after she kind of overloaded herself into her Gundam to prove herself to Soletta, and then discovered that the voice that she had heard that she thought was from Soletta wasn't really her. And we'll get into that reveal in a bit. But what did you think of Sophie overall as like a character? I'm kind of sad that she's gone.
It's kind of it's that sort of typical Gundam thing where everyone has some kind of complicated backstory, right? Like unless you're like a politician or something, very rarely is anyone just purely like evil and incompetent. And, you know, she said that, you know, she was fighting to, because we've seen multiple times that life on Earth sucks hard.
Yeah.
And that she has been basically fighting for all of the kind of basic niceties that, you know, people like even Soletta have taken for granted, right? Like a warm bed, a family that loves her, food, right?
Yeah.
And she also is sort of fully embraced, you know, the idea that she's kind of being exploited to kill people, which is which I liked the back and forth that she had with Soletta, because you know Soletta's a sweetheart, but also she's a little thick when it comes to the moral quandaries of what she's being involved in.
Yeah,
because Sophie's the one that's like, Gundams are made to kill people, like that's what we're doing here, and Soletta's like, no, it's for medicine. And she's like, why does your robot have all these missiles and lasers and swords? And so that is like, oh, wait a minute.
Well, you pointed out that is strange for, isn't it just for disaster response? Was that the original reason that they gave? Was like, you need lasers, you know, if you've got to like cut up debris to save people or something. Yeah, I liked Sophie. I'm sad that she didn't make it further into the series. I forget what her little like Kudere compatriot's name was.
I have it up here. It's not Noria. Is it Noria? It's something like that.
Yeah.
It's Noria. I did get it right.
Oh, hey. Okay.
It's to the point where like I'm so unconfident in my ability to remember anime names that when I do remember it, I'm like, that can't be right. You didn't get it right on your first try. What are you talking about?
That also reminded me that I liked Noria's interaction with Elon, because like they started basically like elbowing each other a bunch, like, you suck because of how on the nose you are with evaluating me. Well, no, you suck for the same exact reason. And then they just kind of glared at each other. I liked that.
I liked when she was like, hey man, you're not gonna beat me if you don't like level up your Gundam synchronization. And he's like, I'm not dying for this, are you kidding me? Like, no. I appreciated that.
I think we should probably get to the reveal though, and I'll admit that I was almost a little mad at how on the nose it was, because so her name is Eryx, but she's always gone by Eri. We haven't seen Eri since the prologue. It's been presumed up to this point that Suletta and Eri are the same person because they look exactly alike. But maybe she's been, you know, living under a false name after the things that went down in the prologue. But now we find out that Prospera had two daughters, not one. And Eri is inside of Ariel.
Yeah.
And I hate it. I don't hate it as a plot development. I just like, I was like, God damn it. Yeah. Of course she is. Of course she is. She's behind the data storm. She's inside the robot. We kind of got like an Evangelion thing going on here, which
we've known there's some kind of artificial intelligence thing going on because Suletta's been talking to the thing the whole show.
Right. And well, so, I don't know if it's artificial intelligence or if it's...
Well, yeah, right. Well, that was the thought at first. We said, it's like an AI.
Yeah.
But no, she actually... speaking of sisters getting their brains scooped out, which is a weird theme of this season, apparently.
This will come up again later in the podcast. Brain scooping. Specifically. But yeah, no. She's still in there, and Sophie, I guess, is also maybe at a point when Sophie had overexerted melding with her Gundam, was able to tap into that a little bit. I don't personally know anything about data storms. I've been told that they are real and that we don't really understand them. I understand that part even less, so I can't really like speak on that. But the weird family dynamic, and this is a theory that I saw floated on Twitter. There's always a theory, and I want to get your thought on this, James. One of the theories is that that Suletta's body is actually Eri, and her consciousness is more like an AI, Suletta, and like the Gundam's consciousness, and that like they swapped. Of course, that kind of ignores the entire fact that there was always supposed to be two daughters. But, like...
Well, when she said two daughters, I kind of thought that, like...
Is that literal?
You know? Well, I feel like the Elon stuff was maybe, like, planting the seed. I feel like she's, like, a clone.
Okay.
I think. Or some kind of, like, you know, fast clone. I like that idea that, like, they're kind of blurring the line between... who the real, you know, kind of a Pinocchio type thing, right? Like which one's the real one?
Uh-huh.
Speaking to the data storm thing you were mentioning, I really like the idea that, cause they talk about how the whole Prospera's whole secret plan has been to create a, like the ultimate Gundam system that can control all the other Gundams essentially. Like, and has like master control. And so with a part of me was wondering how much of it is like, because the pilots are syncing with their Gundams, but as far as we know, the other Gundams don't have like actual people like piloting the system. I think that's unique to Ariel. Okay. I'm wondering how much of it is like, they're almost two halves of the same brain. Like Eri and Suletta are like, just kind of, you know, right hemisphere, left hemisphere, you know, and not literally, but I think just like conceptually the idea that neither one is really complete without the other, or that's the design. You know, the Gundam Ariel is sort of meant to be this controlling interface that can sort of override any other, you know, operator or whatever that's happening, which explains like how the pilots of the other Gundams are able to sense her because they're kind of linked. But maybe it's going to come down to this idea of like, will Suletta be able to separate herself from Ariel, especially when she inevitably learns the truth, or when her
will she even want to?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's her wife going to do?
Yeah.
It's like working with her sketchy mom now.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to talk about that too, but still like staying on the Suletta stuff. Part of the theory of like her not necessarily being human in a traditional sense or having a consciousness swap or any of those sorts of things kind of comes down to like how much of Suletta's personality is sort of like a Moe gimmick, and like how much of it is like, when you really look at it, kind of weird for her. Like, we're presented with her acting this way because we believe that she grew up like in a kind of isolated colony on Mercury and hasn't, you know, gone to school formally. And so she's socially awkward and all these other sorts of things. But then we start seeing how manipulative Prospera is of her specifically. Some people have even said that the like one step back, like two steps forward thing might be like a trigger word for certain things. Like,
yeah, like she's like a Manchurian candidate.
Yeah, Manchurian candidate, or like she's got some Pavlovian responses going on. Like, there's just, and then the kind of cutesy, naive aspect of her personality takes a different tone when you start looking at it under those presumptions. It's not like, oh, this girl's just sort of awkward in a way that's supposed to be endearing to the audience. Like, maybe, you know, she was raised in a lab or all these other kinds of things.
I mean, it could be that she's only like a year old, right? That she got like implanted a bunch of memories. She got grown in like a vat, and then she got, you know, sent off to the school to enact her mom's ridiculous plan.
That's also one thing I wanted to point out. Like, it's still really presumed that Prospera is her mom because she has the same like army situation going on as the woman that we saw who was Ares' mom in the prologue. They don't look anything alike, though, outside of the arm thing. Like, Soleta's mom is a redhead. Prospera has, like, a weird brown mullet hair. Like,
yeah, I'm wondering, I mean, it could,
I don't think their face or eyebrows or anything are the same either, but it could be the Elon type situation where maybe she used to, maybe it is the same person, but then
She just changed her whole appearance.
Maybe she's an enhanced person as well, instead of, and that's where that comes from. But like, I've been wondering about that the whole time. It's like, this is anime. Why did they change her hair color?
That doesn't happen.
You can't do that. If it's red, it stays red.
No one dyes their hair in anime. That's natural born, unless they're blonde.
Yes.
You know, then they make a point to mention how they dye their hair. But
yeah,
you know, if you got purple hair, that's your genetic line.
Yeah, it's to designate you from the rest of the cast. They're easy to spot out. It's like if Choo Choo just randomly showed up, but she didn't have big pink puffballs for hair anymore.
You can't just go saying stuff like that. That's messed up, okay? Choo Choo's always going to have her puffballs. The poor girl is suffering from PTSD already.
She is. I feel really bad for her. Like, she was like, time to pull the trigger during the big school festival fight off. And she's like, no, I can't do it. I've seen people die.
Yep.
And choked. And it was like, you know.
It turns out that when you've seen actual people die, war games become a little less fun.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, do you remember, did you ever watch Child's Play 3, the one at the military academy?
Probably as a kid, but I don't remember that one specifically.
There's a whole bit where Chucky, being the little stinker that he is, he replaces all of the blanks in the military cadets' rifles with real bullets.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and so that idea is always stuck in my head as like a very uniquely terrifying, like, oh god, like, what have I done? But that's like what Choo Choo's living with. It's like, oh, like this isn't actually, we are basically piloting giant murder machines for fun. And that's a little ethically dubious. And meanwhile, Soleta's like, oh no, it's probably fine.
It's probably fine. My mom told me
you're right, Ariel.
Yeah, you're right, Ariel. My mom told me that I did the best thing, you know, for that situation. So this is just, you know,
this was the right call. If I was in her shoes and like my honey girl was down there about to get shot and I had a big robot that could smush a guy.
I'd smush a guy. Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about Prospera's Quiet Zero thing that got dropped. So that's what she's talking to Miorine about in the premiere.
Yeah.
Is, you know, Miorine is at Space Hospital with her space dad on space life support. And Prospera shows up and she's like, hey, don't, you know, misunderstand the lilting tone in my voice. I'm actually terrifying. Also, we've been secretly working on Quiet Zero. James, what's Quiet Zero?
So Quiet Zero, that's her whole Gundam, like, mass control thing, is that she's designing a Gundam that can my understanding, and chat can correct me if I'm wrong, is that it can basically interface with all the Gundams. I think specifically Gundams, not just mobile suits, but like Gundams.
Right.
But that will presumably give them like an army to do with what, basically her plan is to like, I think, perform a little one woman coup d'etat on the entire galactic government coalition. And she wants to force an era of peace and no more war.
Isn't the idea also though that they could all be remote controlled, so they wouldn't require pilots, so people wouldn't have to die? I thought that was also part of it.
Yes,
setting them all up with Bluetooth, and then you've got a Bluetooth controller for all your yeah.
And Shoulders explaining that. So I guess it isn't specifically just, it isn't specifically a Gundam, but it's something that can control the permit field that gives the Gundams all their fancy schmancy Gundam abilities.
Yeah. Also, I think I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't at least talk about the ending sequence, because I think it's amazing.
It's incredible. I mean, it is incredible.
Yeah.
I've watched it, I think, 20 times since I put it up on YouTube officially.
Yeah. It's just great.
Long hair Suletta is, that's a vibe. I wish I was that pretty.
She has a formal dress on. It's almost like she's at an opera or something. And then she starts like conducting the orchestra, but really it's just all the gun bits.
Yeah.
And they start swirling around her and stuff. I just thought that was really cool. And I just really like the animation.
The shot where like Ariel reaches into her heart and it's just so good.
And then it goes like all blue and yeah. The ending is just, it's just great. Looking through your screen caps. So Mr. Lauda is that the brother?
That's Ghoul's Jewel. Ghoul Jeddak, not Jewel Jeddak. That would be insane.
I always pronounce like Gruul without the R.
Yeah, but yeah. Ghoul. Yeah, that's Ghoul's brother, and he gets smushed.
Also, what do you think is going to happen with Shadeek though? Because his adoptive father knows his shit now, and he's basically pulled off at like a double cross.
But didn't he kidnap his adoptive father, basically?
He technically kidnapped him.
Kidnapped him, so I feel like he's got some kind of major play where he's not super concerned with the consequences.
Yeah, because, I mean, initially it seemed like he was helping his father's scheme against Delling, and not Delling necessarily, more like Ghoul's dad, right? Like, they were in on that together. And then he orchestrated the terrorist attack that took Delling out, which pushed his adoptive father into a primary position. And then he's like, cool, okay, now I'm going to trap you at school. And he's got his own little minions. Like, he's got a bunch of... So how does that factor it, because we've kind of got like this sort of pseudo Utena student council for the duels, right? There's a lot of Utena references, or not references, but allusions going on in this series, and that's intentional because I believe the scenario writer or one of the script writers worked on an Utena property, not the TV series specifically.
I think he worked on some novelization.
Novelization. Like, so those elements I feel like are there on purpose. So we've got Shadeek, who was initially kind of called Toga, the counterpart, but he's actually a lot more cunning and smarter than Toga, in my opinion.
Very fair.
But so there's him, and then there's various girls whose names I don't know. There's the one that...
I don't either. All the ones that hang out on that couch.
couch. There's one boy also on the couch who's like, kind of was awkwardly uncomfortable.
Bullied the whole time.
Yeah, he just gets bullied the whole time. And then there's the girl who finally stood up. Like, I guess that was kind of an ongoing thing, is like fans were kind of thirsty for her. Her name's, is it Cecilia? Cecilia, but spelled with an S. I remember thinking that was weird.
That sounds right.
Does that sound like Gundam? Cecilia Gundam.
That almost sounds too normal for a Gundam.
Yes, yeah, Cecilia Dote.
Okay, there we go.
Doto. Okay. Yeah. She's the one who's always painting her nails and stuff. So, you know, she's a vibe, and she finally stood up. But yeah, I'm not quite sure like where their allegiances are necessarily in relationship to Shadeek at this point, if they're all going to back him, if somebody kind of like defect. from him, chat is referring to Cecilia also as thigh girl, which is fair. She wears shorts and I think like high socks. You know, she's got the absolute territory.
Is the anime doing that thing where the socks are just like ever so slightly too small?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that way you have a little bit of thigh overflow right before the socks hit. Yeah. We have an interesting job. Okay. So yeah, I guess we'll just have to see how that plays out coming up with next Sunday. But this show has really just been like hitting the mark, keeping me really engaged.
It makes me think that we are probably not going for a full 50 episodes. I feel like this is shooting for the 26.
I feel like 26 would be good, especially with dropping the airy thing right on episode 15. Like, that's midpoint. So yeah, I would think about it. Wonder what's going to happen to Nika. Yeah, Nika.
Yeah, she's the character that I think I'm the most interested in because her role is still so... She's that character where every time she's about to like reveal something more about herself or do something more active, she gets either interrupted or like kidnapped, you know, or whatever. Yeah. So that tells me that there's like something really, that she has some important stuff to do, but she just doesn't have the chance to do it yet.
Yeah. I think her status at the end of the most recent episode is after being relentlessly bullied with a switchblade and nearly crushed with a Gundam by Noria and Sophia. She's like, yeah, I bet on the wrong horse. I'm out of this, Shadeek, because she had helped Shadeek with the terrorist attack and was having a hard time dealing with that. Didn't feel like she could tell anybody. And then once they infiltrated the school and things started going to hell, she's like, yeah, I'm calling an adult.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done. I'm sorry. I'm turning myself in. Like,
I wasn't really down for all this terrorism stuff.
Yeah.
That's not really what I signed up for.
Yeah.
I just wanted to have my own school anime adventures like Suletta.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to make some friends.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm complicit in war crimes.
Complicit in war crimes. Like, I grew up as an orphan, just like Sophia and Noria did. And apparently there's a orphanage to terrorist pipeline on Earth. And this is what happened, which, you know, like as a plot thing is cool, but I mean, I'm so feel sympathetic to the Earthians. This is coming from Lindsay, known like space Lucifer sympathizer. Yeah. Still sympathetic towards the Earthians and their plight in general when it comes to, you know, Spacian bullshit.
I think we're supposed to be. I think the show is very much at least acknowledging that these are not evil people. They're just trapped in a really, really crappy situation and they feel like this is their only way to like affect change.
Yeah.
And I mean, even Choo Choo, right? Like, she's the one that's like, sometimes you just got to punch someone in the mouth.
Right.
Like, sometimes you can't just nice your way out of getting bullied. Sometimes you got to punch him in the mouth.
Right. And
these girls just happen to be on the side of sometimes you got to commit a little light terrorism to get your needs heard.
Yeah.
But who knows where it's going to go.
Yeah. She had her, a shoulder in the chat here point out Nika had her own list like Suletta's, but I wonder how much of either list will be accomplished at this point, given the state of
everything. Sophie did. I mean, like, that's, you know, her, she recited her list screaming before she horribly died.
Yeah. So. She didn't get to play those video games. Oh, that got me a little bit. Like, her, I
know,
list.
She just wanted like a normal life. You know?
Yeah.
She just wanted to like not be an abused orphan / child soldier, which is, at the end of the day, that's what we all want.
Yeah.
Is to not be that.
Yeah. So. Okay, we're going to switch gears to Heavenly Delusion, which is...
Speaking of weird conversations we have...
Even weirder than everything we just talked about, and we talked about people swapping faces, and we talked about, you know, people getting murdered by giant robots, and double crossing and everything. And then you've got Heavenly Delusion, which I still only kind of know what's going on in this show. Like,
I think we both know exactly as much as the show wants us to know.
That's true. Right.
Which is not much.
Right. It's playing its cards close to, which I appreciate. I feel like maybe it was on last week when we talked about the show. I just appreciate a show that's not scared of leaving us confused for long periods of time. That's those kind of shows are. That's what got me into anime initially. LFR, we will get to the implied incest soon. Okay, that's also part of the show.
Oh, but I don't know if implied is really even on the table at this point. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's just. But is it? Is it incest? Is it necrophilic incest? Is that where we're at?
It's not a corpse, so I'm gonna say no.
But no, oh man, now we're gonna get. Oh God, okay.
There's so many philosophical debates to be had about the show. Yes. Okay, so. what we know about the world so far in Heavenly Delusion is that there's definitely like two lives being lived for. Also, if you're watching on the podcast, I've got green on my wrist. It's leftover hair dye that was on a rubber band that I had on my wrist and now is transferred there. And I dyed my hair like over a month ago, but anyway, so with Heavenly Delusion, there's two sides going on here, and there's a literal wall separating it. On the one side, we have what appears to be a utopic slash dystopic school setting.
Excuse me, from the New World, Shinsekai Yori?
Yeah.
Very, you know, sinister.
Undertones to all of it, right? There's some old ladies running everything. They're just in like
this. They're getting tested every day.
Yeah, there's some kind of weird contained environment. There are no other adults around, I think, except for the old ladies running things. I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure the kids have some kind of superhuman abilities because that one kid took quite the fall.
Yes.
He was just fine.
Yeah, I thought he was dead. But a kid fell out of a tree from what appeared to be at least two stories, if not more. That was one of the earlier episode one or two. And landed flat on his back. I'm like, that kid's dead.
And he bounced.
He bounced up. And I thought he was going to be dead. There was a tone shift when he was climbing the tree that I got privy to while I was watching. I'm like, oh, this kid's dead. He's falling and he's dead. They're going to break this little fun get together by having him fall off this tree and die. And that's how they're going to abruptly change the tone. And then he was fine.
That's fine.
But the way that it was shown was not comedic or anything. Like, we were supposed to think he was going to be dead and then wasn't.
Yeah. Well, did you see the post-credit scene in episode 3?
Yes.
With the babies?
Damn it, Hulu. I'm going to have to go back. It just...
Okay.
Or, well, they talked about the babies. They didn't show the babies.
With the drawings, like...
Yes. I saw all that. Yeah.
Also creepy.
Yeah, also creepy. So we've got, like, this dystopian slash idyllic looking closed off school setting. And then on the other side of the wall, we have two travelers. They're just kind of, they appear to be on their own. Humanity is in shambles. There's been like a major catastrophic event that has actually happened at this point decades, at least a decade, if not more than a decade ago. And they're wandering there. One character just referred to as Sis, and we're going to kind of, James and I were trying to talk about the correct pronouns used for that character specifically, because it's deliberately kind of obtuse. I'm going with they, although I feel like you could make a pretty good argument for he in both of them, but I wouldn't say she in this scenario. Mm-hmm. So there's Sis, whose real name is James.
I guess it depends on which Sis we're referring to, because there is Kiriko, who is the actual person. Also, I have to point this out before I forget it. Sis isn't Sis. Anyway, I'm sorry. I would have never forgiven myself if I didn't make that observation. So Kiriko is the brain inside of the body. Mm-hmm. So in order to talk about this, we just got to get this out of the way. Sis is actually the brain of maybe. Yes. As far as we know, according to the character, what Sis believes is that they're the brain of a younger brother named Kiriko, who got eviscerated by a horrible man eater, and basically chopped in half. And his brain got put into the body of Kiriko's sister, Haruki, who is a professional go-kart racer in the post-apocalyptic future. And we don't really know what happened to her to cause her body to be suddenly available for brain scoopage.
Right.
If that is indeed what happened, which we still don't know. But yes, it's...
that's the big revelation of episode three, essentially. Because up to that point, we just have the silver-haired boy who happens to look exactly like a girl who exists inside the walled school community. We don't know really like what their actual connection is. He knows that there's supposed to be someone that looks just like him in heaven. So
wait,
Did I mess up?
No. Am I getting confused? So Tokyo,
right?
Not the city, but the character. Tokyo is the character inside the walls that looks just like. Let me get my name cards out. Maru. Now, is Tokyo, and I was actually a little confused by this because of the way the characters are drawn. Is Tokyo coded to be male, right? With like,
or
female?
I read Tokyo as female.
Okay, because the eyelashes,
Well, I thought Maru looked effeminate as well from a character design perspective because of the eyelashes, but then they also both have this sort of really short cropped kind of boyish haircut. So I think the ambiguity is also intentional. Theo is saying in the chat that we're not really supposed to know.
Well, it seems like all of the a lot of the characters in the walled enclosure are very, not necessarily gender ambiguous, because I think there are some that are, maybe coded. There are some where I feel like they are presented in a more traditionally masculine or feminine. But there are a lot of the characters like the character with like the top knot, who I
is it one of the are you talking about
the, or the ponytail the one on the left I don't know, it's just and they all have kind of almost like a Sailor Scout uniform thing going
on. They all have the Sailor Fuku, which usually when you watch an anime, if there's a Sailor Fuku uniform, it's reserved just for female students, and the boys have I don't know something with a blazer or like the more traditional high neck black uniform with the buttons on it. The boys don't usually have like the actual like sailor bit. That's usually specifically for feminine uniforms, but they all wear it. All the students have the exact what appears to be the exact same uniform. They all have shorts. Like there's no skirts. No one's wearing a skirt that I've noticed, including Tokyo, who wears a who wears shorts. So this is Tokyo like inside the wall. And she, presumably she, looks just like Maru, who is outside the wall with Kiriko. And it was also pointed out we got the names backwards, and that the Kiriko is the sister and Haruki is the brother, which makes sense because usually Ko is a feminine.
Did I say it the other way?
Sorry. Perhaps. That's kind of like going on in parallel. But yeah, to get to the brain scooping bit, that's mostly episode three, where I also want to point out that we've definitely seen like same-sex coupling too within the school. Like Tokyo chances upon who are presumably two girls making out in the forest, so there is like some hooking up going on.
That was one of the ones I was like, oh, this is some from the New World stuff that we're doing. I'm very curious to know how you're feeling about it. And I think it's a little early to tell either way. I'm very interested that the show seems to very deliberately be asking questions about, you know, gender and, you know, the distinction between biological sex and gender expression in ways that you don't normally see in a lot of anime.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, some of the stuff that they're doing with Haruki and Kiriko and the way he's interacting with being in that body. I don't know.
So I'm enjoying everything about this show.
Yeah.
This part is particularly taboo and like strange, but I feel like the way it's been presented is leagues different than a lot of like bro-con, cis-con we get in anime typically, like My One Hit Kill Sister and things like that. It's not quite the same. I mean, it is pointed out pretty early in episode 3 by like observing characters that Haruki seems obsessed with his sister. It didn't feel obsessive to me until the body thing happened. Like, I was like, you know, it's a post-apocalyptic world. Of course, you're probably going to be maybe a little clingier to your family as like an adolescent than you would be if, you know, the world hadn't completely imploded. We don't know exactly what the catastrophe was that caused this to happen. And we also don't know. It appears in the current timeline, things have gotten worse outside the walls too. Like at the time that this body swap thing is happening, I'm not sure if the walled area existed yet or not. There's a little bit of a time gap there. I don't know how much. I'm assuming like several years, because we do see that Haruki grows up inside this body to a degree, because we see them sitting on like a curb with a sign asking for work, and you can see that time has kind of passed. So
it's been like five years. So that's like,
right. Yeah. They did probably nail down the number, because we know that it was like 10 years, I think, right when the body swap happened.
So he was like 13, 14 when this happened. So basically his entire pubescent life. Now then you get into the question of like, how would his sexuality, like literally just how would his physical feelings of sexual development, sexual desire, how would those things be affected by being in this body, right? Like the hormonal changes, the changes to your brain's relationship with your body, like that, the whole schema of like self. I don't know if the show is necessarily going to go that deep.
Yeah.
But it does make one to ask those questions, because like, so much of how you develop as a pubescent person is, you know, it's hormone based, right?
Yeah.
It's rooted in your hormones. And, you know, would the brain suddenly I think the thing that's interesting is that I don't think we can't call this really a trans character.
They still identify with their original gender that they were assigned at birth, even though their body has changed. And also, I thought about this a little bit, and it's interesting, a thing to pick up. Before this is revealed, it's obvious that there's some argument between this character and Maru about their age, right? Like, because he keeps saying he's like 18, and then Maru's like, well, wait, if you were born this year, wouldn't you be 20? And I kind of like, I just kind of put that away at the time as like, maybe they're lying to cover something up. And then it came out to be true. And it's because that's the age gap between him and his sister physically. So he, at this point, is 18, but the body he's in is 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. As far as like it being, I'd have to kind of see also how it develops going on, like there's also some little poking in this episode about his feelings towards Robin, because and you could write that off as Maru like kind of being a little bit jealous because he perceives Haruki as female. He admits that he has a crush on him and wants a romantic relationship. And then Haruki rebukes him and says, well, you know, I'm male on the inside and this is my sister's body that I'm in. And then Maru's like, well, wait, you talked about this Robin dude the whole time and you're really upset that you can't find him and you're still searching for him. So we find out that's kind of the motivation for Haruki's searches. He thinks that Robin is still alive because there's no proof that he died. And there were some disappearances going on in like the area that they were in. Like people,
like the whole orphanage, like
they abandoned it after so many people were maybe kidnapped.
Yeah.
So, you know, Maru interprets that as feelings towards Robin, but, Haruki perceives that instead as like, well, Robin's like a big brother figure or someone like a role model.
Well, that's what I was nervous about it. And the fact that we got that scene with the two girls that were kissing and mm-hmm. then close made me a little less nervous, because what happens so often in gender swap stories in anime is that there's still a lot of gender essentialism that's just sort of assumed. Yeah. So like the joke is almost always, oh, I might look like a girl, but I'm still a guy on the inside, and therefore it should be assumed that I would never be attracted to another guy, right?
Like right.
That's like an assumption. And that's even kind of the conversation that Haruki has with Maru, is like, because Maru's like, I don't know if I'm ever going to meet a girl that I get along with as well. And he's like, oh, well, that's just because we're guys. You know, that's why, like, you know, we get along better because we're men. You know, like, I could never be attracted to you because, and granted, I mean, maybe Haruki just is identifying as just straight. Slash, he's only into his sister, which is.
Yeah, we have to talk about that a little more.
I know we do. But
finish your thought, though.
The point being, I'm wondering if the show is maybe going to explore, you know, through the development of these characters, not necessarily in like a romantic way. I would love to know that the show isn't necessarily trying to subvert traditional understandings of, you know, gender representation versus, you know, biological sex on one hand, but also reinforcing some kind of regressive tropes when it comes to like heteronormativity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to say, because I think this story is actually taking its characters' identity seriously, which a lot of anime don't really do, like, you know, their sexual identity. And so I don't see any reason other than the weird incest stuff to be nervous about where the show is going to take those conversations. But yeah, we probably should talk about the way that he's fondling his sister's body all the time.
Okay. So,
but his body, which he can, I don't know.
His now, cause he's in it, but the impression I took away from episode 3, and to also touch on what LFR said, I don't think Kiriko told Maru about, his fascination with his sister's slash his body.
He didn't describe flicking the bean furiously in bed once he was.
It's sort of like a blink and you miss it, but it's pretty obvious. Okay, so there's a lot of things going on with this, and I'm in a lot of different mental places about it. So so we have a kid who is experiencing probably very intense grief at the fact that he's no longer in his own body, and that it's his sister's body, but also his sister is dead. So like, that's just fucked up. Like from any standpoint, like
not a good day.
Completely divorced from the sexual stuff. That is going to be like a complicated, like mind thing, right? Like every time you look in the mirror, it's not you, it's this other person that you loved, but also they're dead and you need to mourn their passing, but every time you look at yourself you see them. Like that's just like, that's a lot in and of itself. And grief can cause you to do some pretty weird stuff. Not necrophilic. I'm not like going into that necessarily, but I mean, like personally, I know of someone who had who lost a sibling. It was a sister, and they were very, very close with them. And it wasn't like a expected passing. Like they weren't, it wasn't like an old age sort of thing. Right. Yeah. It was a tragic scenario. And then when that person passed, they were cremated, and the ashes were given to the living sibling to spread in a specific area. But on top of that, they also took some of those ashes and then rubbed them in their hair and maybe ate some of them.
I mean, you know, like, sure, I guess. I can imagine being so overwhelmed at the loss of someone that you feel the need to
Like make them a part of you and that kind of stuff. Now this is still, I feel, several steps removed from what we're about to talk about, but I'm just trying to like kind of give a general sense of like when you really like love someone and have that connection with them, you grew up with them, you have all these memories and identity of each other tied to one another, and then one of them is gone. Sometimes you might do things you'd never think of in order to can feel like they're still a part of you, right? Okay. Yeah. So coming from there, then we have Haruki's situation where he is both maybe exploring a new body in a hormonal state that would be a completely normal part of adolescence if your body wasn't previously your sister's.
Yes.
Right. So you have that. And then you also have like the grief. And part of me almost wonders, and I'm wondering if this makes me weird for even suggesting it, but like part of me felt like it was almost like it was like a way to connect back to her.
No, I totally think so. I think, I mean, it's, you know, it's intimacy, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's, I think psychologically, and that's what makes me not angry.
Like, yeah. If I almost like my one much in for it, which is so strange to say.
I mean, you live in a freakish world of flesh eating monsters and everyone is dying. And the person you love the most in the world is dead all of a sudden, and you got eaten, and sure, whatever you got to do to feel less miserable. Although now I'm starting to wonder, what are the odds of like last episode of the series or whatever, that we find out that the scars and stuff were just like a red herring, and that the brother has been dead the whole time.
That's still a possibility. And I kind of like not knowing for sure. Yeah. Like, that's just her. And she's had some sort of psychotic break or something. Mm-hmm. And is now, like, identifying. The only thing that makes that less plausible is he appears to have legit memories, right?
Yeah. And I was thinking that, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. She could construct memories, right? Like she could, you know, memories that that make sense or that fill in the gaps. But the fact that it would make sense either way, the way that the character is responding to, where it's, you know, a rush of really messy, weird, complicated emotions. I think it's good writing. It's weird writing.
Yeah. It's really not. Yeah. I was going to say, it's really nice. No, it's not. It's really weird writing. But it's nice to have really good, competent writing about this.
As critics, it is nice to have a show that gives us this much to talk about.
Yeah.
Without like having to, you know, it's not like Made in Abyss where it's like, all right, so *...
Right. Yeah. I mean, as of episode 3, this is still a show where if someone hadn't already got caught on and watched up to episode 3, I feel like I would have to add the caveat like, hey, so there's some weird sex stuff in it. There's some weird sex stuff in it. But I feel like it's
within the realm of like, I feel like it's within the realm of weird sci-fi sex stuff, or, you know, weird, I don't know. Did you ever see the movie? It has Ethan Hawke. It's the short story where the person ends up being their own mother and father through time travel.
I don't think I've watched that.
Oh, it's really interesting. Long story short, because of time travel and weird science stuff, a guy ends up going back in time, sleeps with himself. He's intersex. And so he lives most of his life. I can't remember the order. I believe it's
Heinlein. Someone said in the chat, is that the name of it? Heinlein?
No, that's the author.
Oh, okay.
It's not Atonement. That's the other movie. It has a
I think I've seen Atonement.
No, that's
Knightley in it, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to remember it the minute the show is done. But point being, He lives most of his life as expressing one gender, because that's just what he's able to do. There's like some sort of like time travel based accident where he has to have surgery, and basically he has like he has some sort of like genital surgery that ends up basically having him start to live life as the other gender. Time travel shenanigans happen. He meets himself / herself, realizes the only person I've ever been able to truly love is me, bangs it out, and then has a baby that is him. It's a lot.
And that connects back to Heavenly Delusion because
that's the kind of because that's the kind of weird sex stuff that like sci-fi fans I think can go with.
You know? Okay, sure.
It's not sucking the pee out of a robot boy's dingus with evil torture machines.
No, yeah. There's none of that. And even like the masturbation scene we talked about earlier is
predestination. Thank you, chat. That's right.
It's not explicit. It's tastefully implied. I mean, you're only looking from the back through like kind of there's something sort of blocking the view, so you never have like a full view of the body or anything like that. And you can tell there's emotion going on, but it's not. Yeah.
Well, I'm on record as saying that anime characters in general would probably be a lot more emotionally at peace with themselves if they just, you know, took some time off every now and then to treat themselves. So
I mean, we've talked about on the show, like, in general, the lack of like sexual tension or just sex in entertainment. I mean, this is happening in American entertainment just as much, but it's also sort of a thing in anime too, where it's like there's a certain kind of horny that you get in anime, but it's only that one specific kind, and it's for some of us, it's not like it's not doing the job that it thinks it's doing. It's just sort of juvenile. And
because there's no actual sex. It's just people tripping a crotch first onto some dude's face and then going, yeah.
Or just one guy. Yeah. Or one guy being like completely over the top about like how into sex he is, but it never really goes anywhere. And all the girls are just sort of like these like, sort of thing. Or they're just, you know, it's not sexy.
No.
It's just not like actually sexy. This specific scene we've been talking about was also specifically
sexy. No, it wasn't sexy, but it was sexual.
Yes.
In a way that I don't think a lot of anime really is.
Yeah.
Where it was actually, it was dealing with the emotions that are tied to sexual behavior, right? Most of the time, which are messy. Especially when they involve your dead body swap sister.
And sorry, Jackie, did not know this was going to be a part of anything. We'll see you next recording, and I'll be sending you a message about it.
Dear future Jackie, we are so sorry. There's some good monster fights, though.
There are some good monster fights. And we are starting to run out of time a little bit, but I did want to touch back on episode 2, because I feel like some of episode 2 now feels like emotional setup for what we got in episode 3, because it's about this man-eating monster that this woman claims is her son. And I'm starting to wonder if all of them kind of consume humans, similar to how we saw in episode 3, where it was less of like a chomping and more like a liquidizing absorption sort of thing. Like,
kind of like what spiders do, I guess. Like,
yeah, kind of a spider situation. Because what we saw happen to Haruki pre-body swap was, you know, these sort of, it was kind of starfish is kind of what it reminded me of, where the stomach comes out and then digests. Oh, sorry, I always forget that James has a thing with fish.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have a face like a fish.
Ocean monsters.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's how starfish eat. And so this is similar. It reminded me of that, in that we see this white sort of tendrily stuff come out and get Haruki and then grab him. And then by the time his sister shows up and pulls the remnants of his body out, it's just like his arms are gone and it's just a torso and a head. And I mean, it's all gory and gross looking, but like we never saw teeth or, you know, anything like that. It was just goo. And so in episode 2, we have this woman who's kind of living on a homestead in the middle of nowhere. Haruki and Maru are going to kill this man-eater that's been roaming about. And she ends up stopping them, insisting that it's actually her son, who was probably just absorbed. And she thinks his consciousness is still in there. And that's why he's doesn't attack her or anything. And that's true for most of the episode until the very end, where he just slices her head off.
Well, and there's a bit where Haruki's even like, well, I mean, maybe she was feeding people this thing. Like,
yeah.
I think yeah. we saw that. And there's actually, maybe we don't even want to know. Let's just not even.
Yeah, I really
like that though. It was almost like it was like if M. Night Shyamalan did oh my gosh, what's the anime with the Kino's Journey? Almost okay. like I envisioned a version of the show where like every week they just meet some new freak like living yeah. in the post-apocalypse that's doing some monster related shenanigans, and they just at the end of every episode they just go, well, that was traumatizing and awful. Anyway,
and they just move on. And it, I mean, that did kind of seem like what they, because the first two episodes do kind of this back and forth between the kids in the school behind the wall and Haruki and Maru wandering around, you know, I'm not going to say looting, but kind of going through what's
foraging,
foraging, you know, to see what was left behind. And sometimes taking odd jobs in search of this heaven place where Maru's lookalike is supposed to be at. And
to inject him with a drug.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah. I forgot about that. And I'm kind of wondering if it's just to like, neutralize it. Like, what if it's some weird doppelganger? There's also some doctor wandering around doing weird shit, because it's implied that this doctor that was hanging around the orphanage where, you know, people kept disappearing did the operation, or at least that's what Haruki thinks, that got his brain inside his sister's body, and then he's just sort of up and vanished. So maybe he has something to do with the lookalike situation.
Maybe I missed this, but where did we get this freaky laser beam gun that can kill all the man?
Yeah. Like, I don't think we know where the weapon originated. It definitely looks jimmy rigged, like somehow.
But it has that like that logo on it, like the bird, like the yes. bird little symbol.
And they've seen that logo on packaging.
So there's like, you know, like a, not Aperture Science, but you know, like some kind of like, I'm assuming the same organization that's keeping these kids, you know, corralled up in this walled city. I'm really, I love a show with this many mysteries that is willing. Yeah. This brings me back to my days of obsessively watching Lost. #, still a good show. you know, too many, especially after Preview Guide and all these freaking isekai shows that, won't go 2 seconds without explaining 10,000 things about the lore that don't matter. The fact that the show is willing to be like, yeah, it's a laser gun with a symbol on it. Maybe we'll figure something out. Maybe we won't. Here's a dude feeling up his sister body. That's weird, right? Why do the babies not have faces? Who knows?
Yeah, like, so we have not seen the faceless babies yet. But thank God. But inside the walled city, we know there's a popular guy, or at least he's Tokyo's favorite and a couple other people's favorites, and he's an artist, and Tokyo specifically has a miniature gallery going on in the room of his art, which I didn't look at too closely prior. Pretty sure this is the moon from Legend of Zelda
Majora's Mask. Yeah, I thought that too.
Just there too. But there's a lot of weird things here. We see two humpback whales floating in the sky above a burning forest. We see four humans connected with one head in a kind of clover shape, if you could call it that.
We got an angel egg, literally.
With two people in it, and it's got, you know, biblically accurate wings going on. There's also some angelic looking people here above it. And then we just have a giant, sorry, my mouse is not, it's flickering for you guys.
Pillsbury Doughboy.
Pillsbury Doughboy surrounded by flames. Maybe it's in hell. I don't know. Kind of looks like it has an umbilical cord coming off of it or something right here.
I hope that's
I don't know. Cord. I don't Yeah, it's an umbilical cord, guys, or it's a dick. I'm sorry. So that's the kind of art he makes. And in at the end of, well, what was one of the ones he was drawing? Wasn't it like a fish with a whole bunch of legs?
There was some kind of, yeah, like a fish.
With human feet, a whole bunch of human feet on it. That one,
I didn't look at the fish too close. I'm going to take your word.
Oh, yeah, again, with the fish. Yeah. That one kind of got argued about. And then at the end of episode 3, he's drawing a fetus surrounded by what looked like mechanical cables and stuff. It's some sort of, who's the alien? Geiger, right?
Yeah, H.R. Giger, yeah.
Like, yeah, so it's kind of Giger-esque a little bit. It's not quite that, like, there's no phallic stuff going on with it, but Giger-esque. And this one girl, I can't recall her name right now. We'll probably have it by next episode, because
isn't her name, like Cuckoo?
It's like something? Cuckoo or Kaku.
She's, like, always making, like, a cuckoo sound.
She's kind of a weirdo. And her only comment about the drawing, other than asking if she can have it, is like, well, that's funny, because babies don't have faces. Like, your baby's not, it's not that the baby is being grown in a machine, it's that it has a face, and everyone knows that babies don't have faces.
Babies don't have faces, come on.
What?
I love
like, is she just weird or what? Like, what is this?
I love the subtle horror vibes of this show. Like, I like that it's not trying too hard to be scary.
Yeah.
Which I honestly think when it comes to anime, makes it more effectively creepy. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, animation, I've talked about this a lot of times before. Animation is, it's virtually impossible for animation, I think, to be scary, just because of all of the hurdles it has to jump through to trick your brain into believing it's real. But when it's understated, and when it's more about kind of emotionally upsetting ideas, and then, you know, a couple of spooky monsters here and there, that to me, I think, is a much more effectively creepy vibe than, you know, blood and guts spraying everywhere, at least in anime.
Matt Pergler just pointed out, and I happened to pull up the screenshot at the exact same time. James, can I put the fish screenshot on screen? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
The fish monster? All right, all right. So this is the same fish as the drawing.
Yeah.
So what if that weird kid is like, I don't know, he either knows what all these monsters look like and he's been drawing them, or what if, like, I mean, I feel like anything could be true at this point, so.
Yeah. I'm wondering, a part of me has been, I think I've just been sort of trained by freaking M. Night Shyamalan movies and other things to, like, try to predict what kind of twists they might be going for. The way that the show has separated the inside the wall stuff from all of the other rest of the story, you know, it's, I think it's meant, the implication this whole time has been that everything is happening kind of side by side, that, you know, that it's all happening roughly at the same time. But I would not be shocked at all if we, you know, 4 or 5 episodes in, you know, we find out that, like, the inside the wall stuff is actually happening, you know, 20 years before or 100 years after. And that it's actually, like, you know, that the stories aren't actually, they're not going to intersect, you know, that they're going to get to the heaven that we see. Oh. And it's going to be, like, overgrown, and all of the characters are going to be, like, old or something like that. And maybe that's completely untrue, but that's the vibe that I'm liking from the show, is that I feel like it could go any direction.
Yeah. This could be happening simultaneously, or we don't actually know for a fact that it is.
Grew up to make the fish creature. Like, you know, he's been drawing it.
Yeah. We'll find out. We'll find out. So that's why we're talking about Heavenly Delusion. If you want to watch Heavenly Delusion in the United States, it's on Hulu under its Japanese name. I don't know why they didn't localize it. The manga is localized as Heavenly Delusion, but the anime on Hulu is under Tengoku Daimyoko.
Daimakyo?
Daimakyo. Yeah. Tengoku Daimakyo. Yeah, that's where you find it on Hulu. And if you want to watch Gundam in the US, that's on Crunchyroll. If you're not in the US and want to watch Heavenly Delusion, then it's on Disney Hotstar or Disney Plus, depending on your region. It's only the US and maybe Canada, or maybe just the US, that it's actually on Hulu, because, you know, you can't mess up that branding. I guess the Disney branding.
If you're going to watch on Hulu, for now, definitely watch it on, like, a mobile device, because the browser player is all screwed up with the subtitle timing.
Yeah, the browser player, I only tried to watch it on browser for episode 3 because I was working from my desk, and it was completely unwatchable because of the subtitle issue. I went to watch it on my Roku, and it is better, but it will still sometimes unsync due to the ads. So if you have Hulu paid with like minimal ads, sometimes by the time you get to the very end of the episode, the timing will be so far off that it's like a whole second or something ahead, which can really throw you off. So that sucks.
Yeah.
I don't really
say they're working on it, but you know, who knows?
That's one of the things where when I get upset that it's like not on an anime dedicated streaming service that knows how to do this stuff. I don't know how much like non-English language content is on Hulu with English subtitles specifically for the English audience. But I get the impression that's not most of what they do over there. And this hasn't been promoted or really pushed at all to make sure people are watching it like on social media and whatnot. So, you know, just like they did with summertime rendering and everything that they're, yeah. So, yeah.
But watch it. It's good.
But watch it. It's good.
Spread the news.
Tell your friends to go watch Heavenly Delusion on Hulu or Disney Plus. It's definitely worth it. This is basically our plug show, like we did with Akiba Maid War last season, because that was the one that was on High Dive. We're like, hey, go watch it. So
warn them about the weird sex stuff. But like,
yeah. You know,
but it's rated TVMA, so like, yeah, people should be able to.
Yeah, people should, you know, if they watched Game of Thrones,
and that's what I'm saying, right? Like, it's no more incestuous than the most popular drama of the last 20 years,
right?
And none of that was even, well, okay, I guess the consent is such a weird thing when we're dealing with a body that I don't know what.
I feel like we're getting into that territory where it's like, if someone is dead and they didn't donate their body to science, but then you use their body for science, like,
is that right? Can we maybe?
I mean, it is a crime.
It is. Hopefully, the sister consented to giving her body to her brother. Because that's still a little up in the air. We don't really know what happened.
We didn't talk about that on cat. By the way, it's sort of implied that maybe like someone shot the sister. We didn't actually explicitly say that because they don't show it. We don't know what happened to her post her pulling, you know, half her brother's torso out of a monster. But we, at two different points during that episode, we hear a gunshot, but we do not see where it originated from or who did it. So presumably, I would think, no, she didn't consent, because I think she was probably shot in the head and then just died instantly. And then his brain was scooped and put in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So happy anime, everybody.
Happy anime day, everybody. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure to, you know, drop us a subscribe on YouTube. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and Jackie's Twitch right now. Give her a subscribe because she's cool. Leave comments because those really help us out. Recommend us to your friends. Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern every week. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks again, James, for coming on to the show every week.
Anytime.
Yeah. All right. See you guys next time. Bye.